This is Brian Cambria with the KVNF Regional Newscast for Monday, November 25th, 2013. Colorado's energy industry is continuing to make the case that hydraulic fracturing is safe and a critical part of the state's economy. They're stepping up efforts following the recent passage of fracking bans and moratoriums in three Front Range communities. The outcome of a ban in Broomfield has yet to be determined. As Benta Berkland reports, the industry says it wants to change tactics for the long term.
In case you haven't noticed, a new round of statewide ads about fracking have been hitting the airwaves.
Do you know where we can get the energy to heat our homes, power our businesses, keep us moving? The answer is under our feet. A mile under, in fact. Through environmentally safe fracking, we're tapping into...
Funding for the ads comes from Coloradans for Responsible Energy Development, or CRED. Anna Darko and Noble Energy formed the group in September. John Hobart is the spokesman. He says the goal is to educate people and correct misinformation.
Overwhelmingly, the information they're getting is, you know, 2-1 from folks that are against oil and gas development. But still, despite all that, people haven't made up their mind, which means they do want more information. They are looking to get another set of facts.
The idea for such an organization has been batted around for years, and Halbert says things got serious after several anti-fracking initiatives made it onto this year's election ballot.
Merely the fact that they qualified shows that there's not enough education out there on these issues. And I think that there are other entities out there that do some amount of this, but this is CRED's entire focus, public education on fracking. And it's, I think, arguably overdue, but no time like the present.
Improving community relations was clearly on the minds of those attending the annual Mountain Energy Summit in Denver in August. Jeff Naveen was the chief of staff to former Energy Secretary Stephen Chu. During the summit, he told members of the energy industry that they needed to be more transparent.
When you're dealing with something like fracking that is very technical, that is a little bit scary, anytime you've got an opportunity to err on the side of full disclosure, take it. The more you can demystify fracking, the more it's going to be accepted.
It is a reasonable position to be concerned about oil and gas development.
Tisha Schuler is the president of the Colorado Oil and Gas Association. Her group just hired its first community outreach coordinator.
When we have that conversation begun with empathy and engagement, then we are successful. And we found that you can very successfully transition a community from one that's opposing oil and gas development to one that's engaged and passes some kind of solution and is supportive.
But fracking activists like Kelly Giddens say engagement isn't the answer. Giddens works for Citizens for a Healthy Fort Collins, which helped pass a 5-year fracking moratorium in the city.
They're out there saying, this is perfectly safe, we're here to help you, when the fact is that there's not scientific consensus that fracking is safe. So every time they say that on television, they're lying.
Giddens wants more studies on the environmental and health impacts associated with fracking, and she wants companies to drill in less populated areas.
I support any effort to make people's lives safer that are already living with oil and gas.
There are still a lot of unknowns about fracking and its future. The Colorado Oil and Gas Association hasn't said if it will challenge any of the recently passed fracking bans and moratoriums. The state and COGA are already suing the city of Longmont over a fracking ban passed last year. Regardless, John Hobart with Coloradans for Responsible Energy Development says both pro- and anti-fracking groups will continue battling it out.
Certainly Colorado is looked at in the West as kind of a bellwether state, and I think that's why you see it happening here.
One thing that may help the oil and gas industry as speculation grows about a statewide ban on fracking, a new poll from Quinnipiac University. It shows out of 1,200 voters surveyed, 51% support fracking, while only 34% oppose it. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Capital coverage is funded by the Gill Foundation's Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado, a proud supporter of local organizations like the Colorado Department of Education and its programs to prepare and inspire the next generation of science, technology, engineering, and math teachers.
Meanwhile, the BLM has decided it will let groups anonymously nominate parcels of land for oil and gas leasing. According to the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel, a group of conservation organizations and citizen groups sent a letter to the BLM criticizing the move, describing it as, quote, blatant undermining of the agency's efforts to be more transparent. According to the Sentinel, at issue is instruction the BLM's Washington office issued October 28th to state directors. It said that as of January 1st, in an attempt to improve transparency, the BLM will publish online the nominations entities submit to seek to have an area leased. However, the memo also said that it will no longer require entities to provide their names to the BLM in their nominations. According to the October 28th memo, if they are provided, they will be made public. The Paonia-based conservation group Citizens for a Healthy Community previously filed a lawsuit challenging a similar BLM policy where the names of lease nominators don't have to be publicized until after a lease has been sold. As the Sentinel reports, the Daily Sentinel, the BLM has defended its policies, saying energy companies might be discouraged from nominating parcels of land for leasing if they can't remain anonymous. Those companies claim they could lose a competitive advantage if others know about their plans to lease an area. In the lawsuit brought by the CHC, a U.S. district judge ruled that concealing nominators' identities, quote, runs directly contrary to the purpose of the public sale process, end quote. Over 40 groups in all have criticized the BLM's decision, saying if the agency allows nominations to be made anonymously, it would directly conflict with that district judge's ruling. Along with the CHC, North Fork Valley Farms Thistle Whistle and Holy Terror were among the groups that signed Friday's letter criticizing the BLM's decision. The Daily Sentinel also reports that charges won't be filed against Montrose City Councilor Kathy Ellis, who accidentally brought a handgun through an airport security checkpoint last month. Ellis and her husband Gary Ellis, a Montrose County Commissioner, met with the Mesa County prosecutors in Grand Junction on Thursday. At the meeting, Ellis agreed to complete 48 hours of public service and take a gun safety class in lieu of facing charges. According to the paper, Ellis could have faced a Class 6 felony charge of carrying a loaded firearm on public transportation. The Montrose District Attorney's Office concluded the incident was, quote, an honest mistake, and decided Ellis's lack of a criminal record justified the no-charges deal. The Transportation Security Administration, meanwhile, has said it might still consider a civil penalty of anywhere from $3,000 to $7,500. Ellis has previously said she was in a rush to get to the Montrose Airport and simply forgot the gun was in her purse when she passed through a checkpoint. Ellis told the Sentinel the incident was a mistake, but added that, quote, this is not a joking matter and I don't take it lightly. Fall is planting time for wheat across the Great Plains, and this year's crop went into the ground while big changes were underway in the wheat market. Some of the biggest players in the flour milling industry are joining forces to make the country's largest miller even larger. As Harvest Public Media's Luke Runyon reports, that could mean lower prices for farmers and higher prices for consumers.
Doug Schmally dodges tumbleweeds in his dented burnt orange pickup truck at his farm outside Lodgepole, Nebraska, an hour's drive from the Wyoming border.
Wheat is what I make my living off of.
The truck lurches off the gravel road, bouncing between rows of green wheat sprouts.
We had to get the crop planted.
Schmally's wheat gets milled and turned into flour, but by the time it's ready for harvest next summer, it's likely the wheat industry will look very different. Three of the country's biggest players in flour milling want to merge, creating a new company called Ardent Mills. It would be double the size of its next biggest competitor and control roughly a third of the country's flour milling market.
It's somewhat hard to imagine that I, as a producer, will be better off if this merger goes through, if my elevator is only dealing with one company rather than three.
That's the crux of the issue. The biggest flour miller, Horizon Milling, which is jointly owned by privately held Cargill and the agricultural cooperative CHS, would be combined with mills owned by food giant ConAgra. There will still be hundreds of smaller and specialty mills, but a huge portion of the market would be controlled under one roof.
These are not unsophisticated companies. They are not unprofitable companies. They know what they're doing, and they're doing it for the benefits of their owners or their shareholders.
This merger would give so much market power to Ardent. It allows the company to exert tremendous market power, both over the grain elevators and farmers where they buy wheat, and over the bakeries and other manufacturers where they sell flour.
At least that's the worry, says Patrick Woodall with Food and Water Watch, a consumer advocacy group. The U.S. Department of Justice is currently doing its own review of the merger to see if it violates any antitrust legislation and if it would give Ardent Mills too much power.
If you're a bakery, you're getting to choose where to buy your flour from. Once the merger occurs, there really will only be one place to buy flour, and you'll be forced to take whatever price they offer.
And with all that control over the flour that goes into a loaf of bread, bakeries might be forced to pass that higher price onto consumers. The Department of Justice review has kept the leaders of the would-be company quiet until the dust settles. If and when Ardent Mills is up and running, Dan Dye will be the CEO. Dye wouldn't agree to an interview, but provided a prepared statement on the concerns about Ardent Mills' effects on the flour milling industry.
Ardent Mills will continue to face a lot of competition, significant competition from many other companies in the flour milling industry. It's a strong industry, a lot of good competitive forces there. And competition is going to spur Ardent Mills to innovate.
Midwest wheat producers are ground zero for that innovation, and Colorado is quickly becoming a wheat capital. Colorado State University does a lot of wheat research, and farmers in the state and in bordering Kansas, Oklahoma, and Nebraska grow lots of wheat. Daryl Hanovan, director of the Colorado Wheat Growers Association, says having Ardent Mills based in Denver could bring Midwest farmers even more profitable varieties.
This is where the research and innovation's happening right now.
But Hanovan says he's still hearing concern about the merger. Ardent's arrival could skew the wheat market in the new company's favor, and the flour milling industry is already fairly consolidated.
We've had lack of competition, and so, of course, it always will be an issue, and I don't know how you remedy that issue.
These are fairly cutthroat companies that we're talking about here.
Former Department of Justice antitrust litigator Thomas Horton says the remedy is more scrutiny on proposed mergers. He says a proposal like Ardent Mills will only add momentum to further consolidation within the industry.
There could possibly be predatory and cutthroat activities and other exclusionary practices that could jeopardize these smaller mills. There's no doubt about it.
And Horton says it won't stop with smaller mills. He says expect to see the remaining large flour millers, like Illinois-based ADM, to gobble up more mills just to compete. It's a familiar story for farmer Doug Schmale back in Lodgepole, Nebraska. Corporate mergers strategized in boardrooms hundreds of miles away still have a very real effect on him, even if not right away.
It's looking at the long game. It's thinking about how 10 or 15 years out, I'm selling into an even less competitive market, and I'm probably getting a little less for my product because the market is a little less competitive.
The Department of Justice review of Ardent Mills is expected to be finished by the end of the year. If given approval, the new company says it will be up and running in 2014. I'm Luke Runyon, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media reports on farm and food issues and is a collaboration of KUNC and other public media stations in the Midwest. You can find other stories or comment on this one at harvestpublicmedia.org. And finally this morning, the Paonia Eagles football team has won its first Class 1A state championship since 1959. Congratulations to the Eagles. The Eagles beat out Centauri 32-24 on Saturday at Paonia Town Park. First-year head coach Brent McRae told the Colorado High School Activities Association the team's performance was simply unbelievable. We'll have a full report on the Eagles' win from KVNF sports reporter Tammy Meck this evening, just after All Things Considered at 5:50. Thus concludes today's newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria.